studying. Speaking on the way over, explaining that this group, which is CORE, which has been studying literacy and been concerned with methods, approaches to teaching literacy, and have been looking forward for some time to have a chance to talk with you about, particularly on the aspect of literacy approaches that you've had, and we're very pleased that this is sort of the beginning of the week. A chance to talk back and forth around a series of separate but related topics. And the literacy theme today will be picked up again on the Tuesday session, the large session at the Bowker Auditorium, and again on Thursday. So there's sort of three times that literacy would be a specific reference point. So I welcome you. In your home, this is your home, so how
Thank you for welcoming us.
That's one of Powell's themes, you know, that's interactive welcoming.
First of all, I think that you are absolutely right. There is nothing pure, like sometimes we think. And secondly, in order to make the effort of recognizing whether I am in this program or not, we first need, and now I have to ask you to forgive me for the lack of humility, because it's very difficult for me to speak about myself, because from time to time I have to say something which makes me uncomfortable. Like, for example, now, in order for us to know whether Paulo Freire is involved or not, is distorted or not, we need to know what really Paulo Freire said, what really Paulo Freire did. And above all, what Paulo Freire is saying, and not exclusively what he said. Because I did not die, fortunately, yet. And of course, what Paulo Freire is saying, not exclusively about methodology, because it does not exist. That is, if I spoke exclusively about methodology, I would be making some dichotomy between methods and contents and the objectives and the understanding, which would not allow me to speak about methods. You see, what I want to say is that the methods don't exist in themselves, for themselves. Then, we would need to know, to have some conviviality with the globality of the things, of the globality of the thought of Paulo Freire. And right now I remember, for example, that there is something which I have said and I have written. Concerning the possibility for my ideas or what I say to be applied in different contexts, I have said constantly that in order to follow me, it's necessary not to follow me. It means that in order to follow me, it's necessary to recreate me. And recreating is the only way I could be understood, the creating. It is a statement which has some theoretical basis and political convictions. If we take this statement And we think now about the experience there, we can ask ourselves, are these people working with the ideas of Paulo Freire or not? The first approach, they are. They are precisely because they are reinventing me. And secondly, and now it's very important what I want to say, is that even in Brazil, for example, in order for the educators to work with the ideas I have discussed, they have to take think about the contextual differences in the country. One thing, for example, is to work in Northeast Brazil, in cities, urban areas in Northeast Brazil, like Recife, for example. The other thing is to work in Northeast Brazil, but in the rural areas of Northeast Brazil. One thing is to work in the state of Pernambuco, which is my state, in Recife, which is the capital. The other thing is to work in the rural areas of Pernambuco. The other thing, of course, is to work in São Paulo, in the big center. One thing was to work in 1964, 63, 62, how, as I work. The other thing is to work today in Brazil with a total different political background. Thirdly, it's necessary, for example, to know something which is very important, to know whether the educators in Haiti who are giving emphasis on traditional methods or ways of working in contradiction with what they speak about concerning the other Freirean dimension. It's necessary to know whether they are doing that unconsciously, just because they are ideologically conditioned, or on the contrary, if they are doing that because the historical and social and cultural conditions of today in Haiti demand that. Because what happens constantly is that you know, your choice is to work much more openly. But the ideological conditions of your students don't allow you to do that. Then you have to start traditionally in order to be possible during the process to change the methods. Then it's very important to know whether the educators do that consciously or do that in mistake, in contradiction. Without knowing that, we cannot say just because we saw a traditional way of working that they are distorting Paulo Freire. This is how I see the question.
One of the things that came up as we were talking about,
for example, one of the connotations which I love to see in different programs when I'm invited, for example, to visit, to discuss with the educators, is whether the leaders of the program, in having started the program at the level of adult literacy, are interested and preoccupied with, simultaneously, with what to do at the level of the kids, and what to do at the level of the post-literacy program. The formation of the educators is a key point And when I speak about formation of the educators, I am of course making reference to the political clarity of the teachers, of the educators. That they are not the, just the technicians, that they are politicians. And they have to be clear concerning that. I am not saying that they must become to the party A or the party B or the party C. No, on the contrary, I think that as teachers, we have the right to belong to the party A, B, or C, but we don't have the right to impose on the students our convictions about the parties. But we are politicians, that is, we have dreams. I never ask questions just about the techniques they are using for teaching ABC. I never ask questions about that. I am interested in knowing, for example, how they are creating materials for the students to read, how they are using the streets, for example, how they are using the walls of the streets, because we have lots of possibilities to use materials in the walls.
Or what's written on the walls.
Yes.
It's
written in the walls. No. In São Paulo, it's so beautiful. In São Paulo, every day when I'm walking by car in São Paulo, I'm reading the letters which the lovers write to the with spray. No? I don't know whether they do that here. It's beautiful. Sometimes I read in a quartier, how to say?
Correction.
Yeah. It looks like this. Mary, please come back. Don't do that with me. I love you. You know that I love you. John. Sometimes 500 meters later, I read, John, I read what you said before. Yes, I also love you. It's fantastic. Sometimes I seem to make a research about that. We also, I seem to begin to write things like this in São Paulo, to buy spray and to write things. But I am interested in knowing how to take advantage of all these things as exercises for the students who are starting reading. Instead of reading just what is written in the books, to ask them to bring to the class what they read in the walls, mm-hmm. No? And to discuss with them what they brought. Then, what interests me finally is to see whether the educators are trying to be, who are being alive. So the imagination of them is working. It is, if it's possible not to be bureaucratized. And for me, one of the dangers we have with techniques, methods, is to enslave the educators to the techniques, to the rules, which are important also, but which cannot become the masters of the teachers. The teachers should use their imagination, should go beyond the rules with the students. What happens is that sometimes we have more or less clear the contents, the methods, and so on, the objectives, but we are strongly conditioned by traditional ways of working. Let us suppose, for example, when I was a child, let us suppose, I was silent because my father father and my mother imposed to me their voice. When I was a child and I went to the school, I continued because the school and the family belonged to the same society, and many times to the same class, social class. Afterwards, I left the primary school, I went to secondary school, and the same circumstance, same situation, the same banking education. I went to the university and joined the same. And sometime a professor comes or an educator comes and says, "Oh, look, instead of doing like this from above, why not to start from the top? Why not to discuss dialogically, to be much more democratic and so on?" Intellectually, I accept. It's a beautiful speech. But when I go to the practice, all my memory come and condition my way of working. Then it does not make sense to invite me in order to discuss methodologically my mistakes in the methodology. I have to discuss the question ideologically, politically, philosophically. It's almost a kind of psychoanalysis in history, sociology. It's a social, historical, cultural, political psychoanalysis. Which I should make. And I remember when I was in the direction of the program in Brazil, times I saw that during the training courses everything was very clear to be understood. For example, I remember that one of the things I said is that when we ask the people to begin to create words with the combination of the syllables, it's necessary to ask the one who created the word what really means the word he created or she created. Because sometimes the literati put together two pieces, two syllables, and create something which does not exist. Then it's necessary to establish the semantic link in the word, to ask what it does mean, this word, what's this? And I said, sometimes the word really exists, but it exists in the popular universe and not in the universe of the teacher, who belongs to another social class and who has another different kind of intellectual training. Then the teacher must be humble to accept the existence of the word, even though the word is not yet in the dictionary. And I said, there is another point which is important, is that sometimes, many times, the illiterate create words committing some mistakes, orthographic mistakes, from the point of view of our language, the ruling language. It's necessary to respect the popular way of speaking and of writing. But when I went to see them working, generally they did not do like this.
They hadn't undergone that psychoanalysis.
They insisted on the old way they were educated. Yeah. No. And then they did the opposite. Because of that, I used to make each 15 days a meeting in the putting together the educators who were working in some region, for example, in order to discuss the things like this again and again. And because of that, I always say, and I repeat now, the mistakes are not just methodological ones. Mm-hmm. Naively, you could say, this is a methodological mistake he is committing now. No, it's not a methodological. It's above all an ideological, expression. It's an expression of ideology, which we can try to overcome methodologically, but asking methodology to help. We're explaining the political basis for this methodology and the ideological presence in the methodological behavior.
I always had a question about when teachers enter an area for the first time, how do they get the people in that area to accept them, to trust them? I know that you talk about co-investigators and identifying them to work with the teachers, but what are some of the experiences you've had or you know of in other instances where, you know, the community has accepted these people?
Yeah. Look, I think that the answer to your question, as well as many, many answers in the field of education, cannot be written in a kind of guidelines for the teachers. For example, one of the mistakes of your society is represented in the number of books you have. How to get that, how to do that, how to make lovely Wednesdays without difficulties. It does not make sense for me. It is a deviation of the role of methodology, which has to do with the ideology of the system. Deeply, for me, this is. But if we cannot reduce that to this kind of guidelines, we, I think, should think about that as educators. And afterwards, we could more or less begin to make it without wanting to write the guidelines, but to make a kind of list of the
checklist.
Yeah, of things which maybe could not be done, and things which of virtues which we should create in ourselves. For example, if I go to a community which is different from me culturally, above all from the point of view of class, if I go as an educator, and they are illiterate, the tendency for them is to see me in a very, very different level, with some power, and so on. If I go there, trying to give the impression to them that I am equal to them, they cannot believe in me. Because they know that I am not equal. But if I go there, emphasizing the difference, I also cannot be accepted. Do you see? This is one of the points I would put on the table, one of them. That is, the question is to know and to discover, to invent with good sense, how I can be naturally what I am being. Do you see? And it is as difficult precisely because it is very easy. It's very simple. And then it becomes complex. It means that I cannot go there just because I am going there without shoes, because I have to be poor. If I cannot go giving the impression, or trying to give the impression, that I know exactly what they know, I also cannot go there. Underline the difference between my knowledge and their wisdom, in which they don't believe. Then, I have to accept that I know. I have to accept that I know more than them. But immediately, that is, after accepting that I know more than them, I have to start immediately challenging them in order for them to know that they also know. And they, after discovering they also know, they make another discovering, which is they know many things which I don't know. A third discovering which makes it easier for me to be with them is that they have the right, first, to know better what they already know. The first discovering is that they know, because the level of oppression, he says, is so big that they don't know that they know. Many times, no, it's not always. But in knowing now that they know, they have to know that they know what I don't know. They know that I know what they don't know. But then they have to discover that they have the right to know better what they already know. And finally, they have the right to participate in some way in the process of creation of the knowledge which does not exist yet, which is the very production of knowledge of society. And it implies a change in society. It does not mean, nevertheless, that all of us would have to follow the same line I spoke about now. It's just because I remember now to speak about that. But for me, what is fundamental for us as educators is the political solidarity, the clarity in the politics, which I have to get, and not exclusively my ability of loving in very abstract way. That's why I have to go there, because politically I know that it's important. And I have to love, not because it was told me that it is beautiful, but because it is important, really, because I cannot live without love. It's different. I don't have to love them because they need my love. I love them because I need to love them. It's different. No, it's completely different. But as well as I need to love them, I have to discover that, and they have to discover also that in some moment it's important for them to love me. Then I am not speaking abstractly about love or idealistically about love. It is true, Elsa gave me a challenge. I remember at the time in which I was not yet able to write. I was not writing. I started writing very, very late. It's very good to tell you young people, someday you write, because I wrote off. But I remember the times Elsa came next to me and began to talk with me as if she were making psychotherapy. with me, and she said, look, Paul, let us talk a little bit about the reasons why you don't write. Because, look, you speak a lot, you say beautiful things. You convince us when you are speaking, why do you not write? I said, because I am not able to write. No. And one day she said something which me feriu mucho.
Infuriated you?
Me feriu. Me feriu.
Oh, yeah. Wounded you.
She said, I think that you don't write because you don't believe in you. You are not secure. You are afraid. You don't want to risk. And it was true. Because of that, I speak so well about security, self-defense. It's not a book. It was not the book, the books which taught me. I learned it with life. And she said, you must get confidence in you. You have to risk. And then I began to write. I remember that the first year in which I really wrote, I wrote 1,600 pages in Chile in less than 1 year. It was the year I wrote The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, and I never stopped writing until today. That is, I stopped now, after the death of Elsa, I stopped in there. Until now I did not write, unless to her. But I am beginning now to write. I am able again to write. And I think that it's good to tell you that I'm fine. I right now I am being able to love another woman, and it is beautiful to tell you. That in spite of my fantastic love for Elsa, I saw that just in living, it should be possible for me to stay here in the world. But it is being very difficult for me to have come here again, to this city. I came for this week in order to see whether I can come again. Because I lived 1 month sometimes here with Elsa, and each piece of the city has to do with me and with her. But at the same time, and I am thinking to write about that, to demystify many things, because and also to teach something about that. For example, I am sure that without the love of Elsa, I could not love today Nita, which is the new woman. See, without Elsa, no possibility for Nita. In other words, if I did not have had the experience of love, which I had 42 years with Elsa, I would be afraid of loving. And I am not. I'm 66 years old, and I have the courage of beginning everything again, starting from zero. And it is beautiful. I have this courage, and I would like to tell you that I am a normal man, and because of that I am able to live, and I want to live. But I did not forget Elsa. Anita is not the continuation of Elsa, and does not replace Elsa. Elsa has her place, which is her, belongs to her. No possibility to be touched. Anita understands, because I also am not the continuation of the husband who she lost. And we we both understand very well. Nita não tiene celos de la alma de Elsa.
Nita is not jealous of the soul of Elsa.
And then we can do that. But I think that it's fantastic, this question of this prize with the name of Elsa is good. And she was my teacher. But in being my teacher, she was also my student. And she taught me how to love. It is fantastic. I tell you one thing, to finish. When we were 27 years old, in a beautiful night of love, because I don't know, no, it's no problem to
I can turn it off if you want.
I never could accept it. Loving in a bureaucratic way. I never could understand, for example, making love in Mondays and the Wednesdays at 10 o'clock. Never. I never could accept making love in 20 minutes unless we had to get the plane. Because making love is loving. It's loving. It's a total experience. It's a poem. It is reinventing the world. How is it possible to bureaucratize my body? The body of my wife, of my woman. And I remember that in one of these full nights, she started at 8 o'clock, finished the next day. I asked Elsa one of the questions which all the machos in Latin America soon or late ask. I asked her, if I died now, would you get married again? All the machos ask this question. And she said immediately, again, no, but another time, yes. I said, but what do you mean by that? She said, again should be with you. And another time with another man. And she said, look, Paul, if you ask me again the same question, I am sure that you are not secure about what you do with me. Because if you know the quantity of pleasure of life which you gave me, you have to understand that I cannot survive with this. But if you die now, how can I continue to get this quantity of pleasure with you if you die? If it is impossible with you, I have to have another man. Then I will get married all the time. Look, I never forget it because it was a fantastic answer which a woman in a machista culture gave to a man. And I began to understand that that time, many years ago, what really meant to be together, a man and a woman. And it was, I never forget that, the wisdom which Elsa had to teach me. So it's a very simple answer, very objective answer. And I learned until today what meant that. Then in my letters to her, I speak about that. But it was not easy for me, and it's very difficult for me to all the this period of after her death, it is terrible. I remember the first time, 5 months after the death of Elsa, the first time I saw a flower, a rose in the garden, and I stopped. And I looked at the rose. I went to my room afterwards to cry and to deal with my guilt. How is it possible, I asked myself, to be happy if Elsa is not here? You see, very, very difficult. And you can realize what meant when I begin to discover another woman. What meant that? That is, it was much more difficult than Elsa was alive. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. Do you mean? Because if Elsa was alive, I could come to her in the privacy of our room and to tell her, look, Elsa, help me. Help me. I feel in love with another man, woman, another man. Please help me. But without her, I felt in a very difficult situation. Because I could not tell her. Then I would have to talk to myself about that. And this is one of the greatest problems when one of the couple lose the other. That we lose the, how to say, the confident.
Trust.
Yeah, no, we lose confident. When the other dies.
We lose our confidence.
Or confidence.
We lose the, yeah. Then we don't have possibility to say things which we don't say publicly. Mm-hmm. And it took time, man. But today I am more or less well.
Alive and well.
Okay.